pharmaceutical company AstraZeneca announced on Monday that its vaccine was almost 80% effective at preventing COVID symptoms. But today, health officials with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases questioned the findings, bringing up the concern that AstraZeneca may have used outdated information to obtain those results. In other COVID news, the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine was meant to speed up U.S. vaccinations, but those shots haven't been distributed as quickly as hoped, and the CDC is warning we're at risk of another preventable surge. Plus, Wisconsinites with certain health conditions became eligible to get vaccinated this week. We're talking about the latest COVID news, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions you have about the vaccine rollout so far? Have you been able to get vaccinated? Do you have an appointment now? Are you looking for an appointment? Do you have questions about this AstraZeneca vaccine story? Are you watching for the Johnson & Johnson one? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Malia Jones is an epidemiologist. She's associate scientist in health geography at the UW-Madison Applied Population Laboratory and editor of Dear Pandemic, a resource where scientists answer your COVID questions. Malia, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me back, Rob.
Before we get into some of these the details here, the big picture, Malia, it seems like vaccinations, they're out there, they're ramping up. We still need a bigger supply, but the overall news seems pretty good on vaccinations, right?
Yeah, the overall news is, especially looking at the big picture, really very positive. We have three really terrific vaccines that are becoming more and more available to the general public here in Wisconsin. We have a lot of the adult population is eligible to get a vaccine at this point, and we are seeing the vaccine rate steadily go up and the infection rate steadily going down or holding steady, depending on what part of the country you're looking at. So things are looking a lot better than the last time I came and talked to you.
How do you think about the way we deliver public health messages, we being us in the media and you epidemiologists? We've got a lot of good news. At the same time, we're not done yet. We've got these new variants. We're seeing places in Europe adding new restrictions after opening up because they're seeing these variants kind of take off. I don't know, what two-pronged message do you want people to hear right now?
Yeah, it is really kind of an awkward moment. And as you alluded to in the intro, we're at a tipping point or a fork in the road, maybe. We have these great vaccines that are increasingly available and more people are protected, which will suppress both the infection rate and the risk of really serious outcomes and hospitalizations and deaths. But simultaneously, we do see these emerging new variants that are more readily transmitted from one person to another person. Some of them have already been detected here in Wisconsin, and what we are watching happen elsewhere, especially in Europe right now, and other places around the world, is that these new variants, just a little bit more transmissibility can really pack a punch when it comes to a lot of disease spread. So I think the CDC has alluded to this idea that we have a choice to make. We need to stay the course and get as many people vaccinated as quickly as we can while simultaneously holding strong on these non-pharmacological approaches like wearing masks and, keeping our interactions with other people as limited as possible. Otherwise, the variants could outstrip our vaccine efforts and we actually could see another surge in spite of the increasing vaccination rates.
Now, I wanted to get your take on this AstraZeneca story. As you mentioned, we've got three good vaccines here. Maybe this fourth one is on the way. Europe, other places are using it, not getting approval here in the U.S. Some questions raised about some of their documentation here. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, this is really unfortunate. The AstraZeneca vaccine has been approved for emergency use in many parts of Europe and elsewhere in the world. And things have been going fairly well with the rollout of the AstraZeneca vaccine, but it's just been plagued by these kind of question marks around their data. And it's really unfortunate because that does undermine public trust in the vaccine itself. What really happened here in the United States over the last couple of days is that AstraZeneca submitted some preliminary data to the FDA in anticipation of applying for emergency use authorization, which is the same process that the other three vaccines have already gone through. Shortly after those data were submitted, the safety advisory committee that reviewed them said, hey, wait a minute, these aren't the most current results of your trial. What's going on with that? And National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, as you mentioned, also wrote a really strongly worded statement saying, you know, hey, we really need the most current data. As it turns out, the most current data showed slightly less efficacy than the outdated data that AstraZeneca submitted. And, you know, it's still actually quite good. And it's very puzzling why they would have decided to do this and not just wait for the more complete data that show, you know, the real story. We need transparency when it comes to getting these vaccines through the FDA authorization process.
We're talking about the latest COVID-19 and vaccine news with Malia Jones from the UW-Madison Applied Population Laboratory. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. John starts us off in Madison. John, hello.
Hi. I would like to give people more hope, but it was very difficult to schedule an appointment after qualifying based on eligibility that happened yesterday. I spent 24 hours or so plus some sleep time to try to make an appointment, and it appeared to be impossible, you, no matter where you selected a location for, like, Walgreens. But somehow along the way, I found about a group in Milwaukee, a Facebook group, and it was amazing. I wasn't sure what was going on, but I had a person who answered a phone, and they sent my name or posted something in my name. Two people responded that they would find an appointment for me, and they both did. And I have an appointment tomorrow at 9:30. So Whoever they are, they were amazing. So,
John, thanks a lot for the call. And Malia, there's a lot of different roads that people could travel to find their appointments. The kindness of strangers in this case, pharmacies, people's healthcare providers, I know, reaching out. There's a lot of different paths, not always easy or unconfusing to follow those paths.
It is absolutely, it's really a jungle out there when it comes to this process of getting vaccines. You know, I don't want to sound like I'm making apologies for any of this, but I do like to think about the mind-boggling logistical challenges of getting a vaccine to millions of people in the United States and in Wisconsin all at one time, really without much in the way of a structure to support that. I hope one of the lessons that we take away from this whole mess is really that we need to have some kind of plan and some kind of distribution system that's already in place that we can refer to the next time that we need to get a vaccine out in a big emergency like this, because it's very challenging. And one of the real equity issues here, you know, I'm really happy to hear that John was able to reach out to one of these groups. Essentially what's happening is people who have the time are volunteering it, so that people who just don't have the time or the internet access or the know-how to navigate this complicated system can get a vaccine appointment without having to, you know, make that investment. There are people who don't have time to sit and, you know, wait on hold for an hour and a half because they're working two jobs or whatever. So one of the real equity challenges has been that not everybody has the ability to navigate this complex system.
We continue our talk with UW-Madison epidemiologist and Dear Pandemic editor Malia Jones about the latest COVID-19 news and vaccine information that's out there. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, questions, and experiences. Let's go back to your calls now. James is with us calling from Northbrook, Illinois. James, hello.
Hello. I spent a lot of time trying to get an appointment. Someone gave me the inside. I did get my first shot. but I'm over 65, but it's not fair because of all these other people trying to get in. I wish that they had a software program, you register, and then they contact you, and they would just give you an appointment. And then if you can't make it, then you get online to change it. But if you want to get one, I'm available 24 hours a day. You know, let's move on with this instead of all these people fooling around with the internet. And a lot of the older people don't know how to deal with this. So it's just a thought for the future.
Thanks a lot for the call. James raising concerns about seniors, especially those who obviously we want to have the shot early on the list, not necessarily having that internet access or experience, Malia.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea to have an, you know, an app or some other kind of registry. Some states have attempted to implement something like this, including Wisconsin, but it's been pretty spotty. And as I said before, I hope that one of the real lessons learned from this is that we do need some kind of system like that to be already in place and just ready to launch for the next time we have an emergency like that, like this one. It's just, you know, the lift was too big to get it really well coordinated on the timeline that we had. And so, yeah, it's really a mess. You know, getting a vaccine appointment is a big challenge.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Steve next in Sun Prairie. Steve, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, there's no question the rollout could have been done better. But, you know, my question and comment are, you know, I was diagnosed with COVID. My family was not. I live with three other people. So I do believe, I think most people believe that the numbers are completely understated in terms of how many people have gotten COVID. And based on the articles that I have read, whether you have the vaccine or got the disease, you would then have the same level of immunity. That's a number of peer-reviewed articles that I've read. So based on those factors, one, if you already had it, do you need the vaccine? And two, aren't we already close to herd immunity?
Steve, thanks for the call. And that's, I think, an open question, Malia. Does having had COVID, as Steve did, and I'm glad you made it on the other side, Steve, does having had COVID provide comparable immunity to vaccines from what we know at this point?
Yeah, it is a great question. So people who have recovered from COVID-19 do have some naturally acquired immunity to getting the disease again. There are a lot of unknowns about how long that immunity lasts and how robust it will be, especially against different variants. The type of antibodies that are generated from having been infected are different from the type that are generated from getting the vaccine. The vaccine is also a very specific dose. We know exactly how much antigen goes into the vaccine dose. And so we can really control with the dosing and the timing for two dose vaccines, what we know about how the dosing went. And so we do encourage people who have been previously infected with COVID to get vaccinated because it really does provide a more stable and stronger and more robust type of immunity. There was just an article that came out yesterday or the day before in JAMA that showed the immunity that was the neutralizing antibody levels that were produced for against several different COVID variants by previous infection, acute infection, as well as immunization. And across the board against all four variants that they tested, the immunized group had much higher and much narrower variation in that immunity. So the immunity from vaccination was in fact better.
Thanks.
Now
that
said, you probably do have some immunity to COVID-19 from having previously been infected. And, you know, this is one of the reasons that we are seeing reports of people who have been previously infected when they get vaccinated. They sometimes have stronger side effects, and that's because your immune system is already primed to have a response to the virus.
Steve, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Malia, before we go back to our callers, a question I saw in Dear Pandemic, you're getting a lot. I'm imagining a lot of people are going to have this question is, you know, if you've been vaccinated, you've gotten your second dose, if it's a two shot, you've made it the 2 weeks after that, what do you get to do now that you couldn't before?
Yeah, this is the question of the hour. So CDC has been releasing a lot of new guidance And one of the new pieces of guidance that they just released over the last 10 days or so has to do with guidance for fully vaccinated people. And the guidance for fully vaccinated people, it defines fully vaccinated people quite specifically. It says that means you've had, it's been 2 weeks since your final dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. It does not include people who were infected and recovered from COVID-19. So 2 weeks after your final dose, that's your first dose for the J&J shot and your second dose for the other two, fully vaccinated people can relax the mask suggestions and the social distancing and the staying outside recommendations with other fully vaccinated people. In addition, fully vaccinated people can relax those guidelines with low risk unvaccinated people, as long as you don't have more than one household gathering at a time, and also can skip quarantine if they have an exposure. So it's a lot of, I think, opportunity and hope that's been provided by these new guidelines. And they really do suggest that CDC has reviewed the evidence and said that, you know, these vaccines are so protective for COVID-19 that the risks are very low to someone who's been fully vaccinated.
We are talking to Malia Jones from UW-Madison Applied Population Laboratory and the Dear Pandemic Gang of Scientists. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your COVID-19 and vaccine-related questions. Let's go back to your calls now. Jake is with us in Oakfield. Jake, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to ask about, Jake?
You said that if you get sick from COVID, you could have a small amount of immunity for a short time. I was just curious, how do they know what the longevity from immunity is from the vaccine? Like, how do they know that's going to last?
Great question. And we, you know, just as you were saying that, I realized I didn't answer Steve's other question about herd immunity either. So let me answer your question first. So what we know from the vaccine is the immunity that's been maintained since the vaccine trial started, which is about 9 months or so now, in some cases 10 months. And the vaccine trial participants they're still enrolled in those studies and they're still being followed to see how long the immunity from the vaccine lasts and how strong it is. We also do laboratory studies to review how the vaccine immunity performs against different variants. And then we can compare those results to the observations that we make for people who were previously infected. And what we find is that people who were previously infected, some of them have very strong immunity for a long time. You know, we're a year out now. Some of them still have very strong immunity. Others do not. Others have no detectable antibodies anymore. And when we compare that to the vaccinated population who were in those earliest trials, the vaccine-produced immunity is very stable. We also know this from having developed other vaccines to other viruses. The immunity that's produced from a vaccination is often stronger and more durable and more robust to variants than from a natural infection. Can I return also to this question?
To the herd immunity.
Really,
yes.
At herd immunity. Yeah. So, you know, we really don't know how close we are to herd immunity because we don't have a great idea of how many asymptomatic infections there have been. In order to find out the answer to that question, we would have needed to do some different kinds of studies. And specifically, we would have needed to do some random sampling studies where we just randomly picked people and tested them for COVID and also tested them for COVID antibodies. That kind of study was not performed in many places here in the United States, but in the local areas where it was performed, we got a sense of what's the ratio of detected COVID-19 infections to the ones that went undetected. And so, you know, we just kind of have to extrapolate. And when we do that, we see that it feels like a lot of people got COVID-19, especially in the fall. Wisconsin had a tremendous surge in cases and things were really dire. But it still wasn't most of the population. And we really do need to get something like 70 or 80% of the population to a point of immunity before we can even really consider herd immunity. The other point is that, you know, these concepts that natural infection may not produce immunity that's as durable, especially to new variants, is very important. One of the places in the world where scientists thought there might have been so many cases of COVID that the area did achieve local herd immunity is in Brazil. And the new Brazilian variant is now infecting lots and lots more people in that specific city. And so, you know, basically the new variant, if they ever did have herd immunity, the new variant has found a workaround and is infecting those same people.
We'll leave it there. Malia, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Malia Jones is an associate scientist in health geography at the UW-Madison Applied Population Laboratory and the editor of Dear Pandemic, a resource where scientists answer lots and lots of COVID-related questions.